The Tom Woods Show, episode 1950.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. Brian Piotr is a Mises Caucus libertarian running in a head-to-head race for Broomfield City Council in Colorado. In this battle of ANCAP versus slave master baddie, would you consider donating $20? Visit taxfighter.com to help send the statists home. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. I'm very glad to be joined once again by Alex Epstein, who is the president and founder of the Center for Industrial Progress. He's also the author of The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels, a book we've discussed on the show. And what I want to talk about today is something he did not too long ago. He testified at a hearing before the House Natural Resources Committee, and this is a committee that has AOC on it. And the subject matter had to do with Puerto Rico and energy. Now, as it turns out, as we'll discuss, it was actually a rather specific issue, but Alex is a big picture guy, and boy, did he bring the big picture to this testimony at this hearing. So I'm going to, on the show notes page, have the full text of the testimony, of course, tomwoods.com/1950. I'll have that there. And of course, a link to Alex's book, which I urge you to read, and all other Alex Epstein things will be sitting there waiting for you at tomwoods.com/1950. Alex, welcome back.
Great to be here, Tom.
All right, we got to talk about it. I mean, it's a little late. That was just because of me being in bed, but better late than never. I want to talk about your testimony. Now, tell me exactly, so it was the House Natural Resources Committee, and I'm going to link on the show notes page, which is episode 1950, so tomwoods.com/1950, to your extended written testimony, which everybody should read. I mean, what a great primer this is for really for anybody who wants to know about energy and fossil fuels. But you're talking specifically about Puerto Rico, and there are certain factors that are somewhat unique to Puerto Rico when we think about the United States and its territories. And one of those is the poverty level and the income of people in Puerto Rico and the amount of money they spend on energy. So let's start there. And then later we'll talk about AOC and stuff like that. But let's start with what you had to say. And let's start with the unique situation of Puerto Rico.
Well, I'll start with that. But let me just say one quick thing about the hearing itself, because I think the hearing itself was framed in a way that I disagreed with, and that informed what I talked about. So the hearing was specifically about coal ash in Puerto Rico. So coal ash is a byproduct of burning coal, and it is something that human beings have developed very good ways of dealing with generally in terms of minimizing any negative impacts of it. And in fact, coal ash is used in many different kinds of industrial applications. But the premise of this was there is a coal ash problem in Puerto Rico, and so the thing to do is let's eliminate the coal plant. So it was specifically about let's eliminate this coal plant. Okay, so that's important because it's the usual thing I point out where it's just focusing on negative side effects and ignoring the benefits of something. And it also is this usual thing where you're not actually trying to solve the problem, you're trying to use the problem, in this case, to oppose coal plant instead of like fixing any problems, and then also oppose fossil fuels more broadly. So with that in mind, I found this all particularly offensive given what you raised, which is Puerto Rico's situation. So Puerto Rico has a poverty rate of 43%. So that's compared to 10% in the 50 states. The cost of energy is three times higher, and per capita income is $13,000. So you have people making $13,000 a year paying three times what most of us in the states, now I a little less than three times what I pay in California, but nevertheless, you're paying way higher energy prices. And so my view is you cannot have any kind of okay hearing about Puerto Rico without discussing the fact that it is drastically underpowered and very related, very poor. And you should have an extreme interest in empowering Puerto Rico. And particularly if you know that not only is the energy expensive, but the electricity in particular is incredibly unreliable to the point where so many businesses wouldn't go to Puerto Rico that otherwise would. Businesses are fleeing because reliable electricity is so crucial. And then on top of that, this coal plant provides 20% and just about the most reliable, resilient 20% of Puerto Rico's electricity. It was one of the things that was least hardest hit by the hurricane a couple of years ago. So if you keep this in mind, I just want to give the context. This is why I thought it was so egregious to have a whole hearing that's designed to shut down the plant that provides 20% of the reliable electricity that Puerto Rico desperately needs, and to just, instead of looking for solutions to any problems and focusing on how do we empower Puerto Rico with a lot more electricity, which nobody seemed to be interested in.
Did they mention green energy and say that at least maybe that could fill in some of the gap?
Well, sort of, and this goes to AOC. I had a kind of semi-viral video where I expressed my frustration about nobody seeming to have any idea what is actually happening, because they're talking about, yeah, we can get rid of the coal plant. So they said they didn't acknowledge the need for more electricity. They just said that, oh, whatever the coal plant is providing, we can replace with solar and wind. And my first point is, it's not enough just to replace what it's providing, because what it's providing is so paltry. We need much more. So part of the point is, no, nobody was focused on more electricity, because they, like most people, don't place any value on energy, and they're just concerned about the alleged negative side effects of energy. But yeah, in terms of even replacing it, this is a joke. I mentioned that all quote-unquote renewables, including solar, but not limited to solar, it's 2.5%. of Puerto Rico's electricity. And insofar as it's solar and wind, it's unreliable. So again, we've got 20% and they're saying shut it down tomorrow. AOC literally said you could shut it down tomorrow. And she cited a study by Siemens that I looked into. And she said, oh yeah, the Siemens study said it's absolutely possible to shut it down tomorrow and there will be no adverse effects. And there are a couple of videos that I did, including an extended one on YouTube. And I just went through this and I looked at the Siemens study that was submitted. It said no such thing. In fact, it said absolutely, not only can you not shut it down tomorrow, but they only considered shutting it down by 2027. And they said, absolutely, this will increase costs, even if you do it by 2027. So I was pretty shocked that she was saying that kind of thing so authoritatively. And then she had this witness who was an environmental lawyer, I think connected to Earth Justice or one of those organizations. And I refuted literally every statement they made about energy. And I tried to do it as politely as possible. And I thought there was some chance AOC would respond, but so far no response, even though keep in mind, Puerto Rico, she has to care about. Her grandmother lives there. She advocated a policy that would absolutely ravage that island. It was based on completely false statements that I definitively refuted, more definitively than you could refute anything. And she seemed to have no interest. The only thing I saw that acknowledged my point was that she had none of her usual social media posts about this hearing. So usually she has all these great hero moments and those were missing from her social media presence.
That's a very polite way of putting it. Those were missing in this particular case. I like one of the points you make about what you call the climate impact of fossil fuels, because when everybody thinks about global temperatures, they immediately go to that. We can and should talk about that. But I like your point that we need to think about climate in general, the various types of climate catastrophes that have occurred in the past, that the existence of fossil fuels on a large scale has actually served to suppress, to very largely suppress. Take a minute to talk about that, because I love that point.
Sure. So I think it's important to be clear philosophically on this. And I think the primary question to ask is our goal a livable climate, or is our goal an unimpacted climate? So livable climate means, you know, climate that we can live, I use the term flourish in. So we're safe as possible from different kinds of dangers. You know, we can use different elements of the climate for our benefit, especially, you know, for food production. So do we want a livable climate or do we want an unimpacted climate? Unimpacted climate just means a climate that we have no effect on. It doesn't mean that it's good. And philosophically, I very much believe in a livable climate, and I don't care about an unimpacted climate. In fact, I think we should actively try to impact climate, as in if we can neutralize terrible hurricanes in the future, we should absolutely do that. But I think today, people conflate a livable climate and an unimpacted climate, and they're totally different. And so to your point you raised, the unimpacted climate is naturally dynamic, and it's naturally very dangerous, and it's also diverse, by the way. So it's important that that's the natural state of things. And so historically, climate was a menace to human beings. People were legitimately afraid. They weren't just afraid in the sense of, oh, I can write a good tweet or a news story about this. Like, they were legitimately afraid of climate. And what changed that is the ability to produce climate protection. So to produce things like sturdy buildings and heat on demand and cold on demand and irrigation systems for drought relief and convoys for drought relief. I call all of this climate mastery. And all of this depends on the use of machines, which means that it all depends on the use of low-cost, reliable energy, which means it depends on fossil fuels, because that's the only globally scalable form of low-cost, reliable energy we have. So I talk a lot about fossil-fueled climate mastery. And from the perspective of a livable climate, there is just no doubt, it is irrefutable that we have the highest climate livability that we've ever had. And I think the fact that people don't acknowledge that shows that what they're after, whether they know it or not, is not a livable climate, but an unimpacted climate. And that's a philosophical slash religious issue, not a scientific issue. And my big point about the modern climate catastrophe movement is it's based on this primitive religion that we shouldn't impact nature, and that unimpacted nature is the ideal, and we should be striving to eliminate our impact on nature. Like, that's what's driving all of this, not that we actually have a climate problem, because again, we are better off in terms of climate than any human beings have ever been.
Let's say at least a quick word, though, about the problem of so-called climate change. Now, there's a guy, William Nordhaus, who won the Nobel Prize in economics, and he's a very mainstream sort of Keynesian economist. He co-authored the later editions of Paul Samuelson's very popular college textbook, very well-known guy. What was not made clear at the time that he won the prize was this was around the time people were talking about trying to limit the increase in temperatures to 2 degrees or then even 1.5 degrees in the future. And what they didn't point out about Nordhaus's work is that he showed, and he didn't even point this out about his own work, that he showed that the damage that that would do to the world economy would be so great that it would be better for the world to just ignore climate change completely than to try to reach a target like that. It would be better to do absolutely nothing about it than to try to attain a target like that. Not a soul, other than Bob Murphy, I don't know of a single soul who pointed this out about this guy. So,
oh, there's a bunch of people who pointed this out.
Okay, good.
Like Bjorn Lomborg has publicized this. Michael Schellenberg has focused on this broad point. So there is this point, although I challenged it recently on Twitter from a certain perspective. But let me explain the point, and then let me explain how I think about it, which is a little bit, actually quite a bit different. So it is true that the leading climate economists acknowledge to some degree what I think the obvious fact is, which is that any attempt to rapidly eliminate fossil fuels is incomparably more damaging than anything rising CO2 levels could cause. If you're looking at human life, and one of the nice things about economics is that, at least in some way, trying to look at human life. So if you're talking about the world, they're looking at a livable world for human beings, not an unimpacted world. And I think a lot of the focus, just like it's on an unimpacted climate, is on an unimpacted world, unimpacted planet overall. So it is true that the findings of climate economists are being ignored, and that because they're not convenient to the catastrophe narrative. So I want to say something, though, about climate change and how we think about that. So I mentioned that we ignore the climate mastery benefits of fossil fuels because we're not focused on the right goal, which is advancing human flourishing, a more livable world, not eliminating human impact, having an unimpacted world. So you have to look at the benefits, which nobody looks at. But the other thing you have to do is you have to look at the climate side effects. So that's what people call climate change, but I would say man-made climate impact. You have to look at that from a human perspective, which means that you cannot assume that it is negative, let alone catastrophic. And I'm going to, can I give you a quick quiz, Tom?
Oh, no, I hate quizzes.
It's not a factual quiz. It's just okay. A theoretical. Right. Like.
Okay.
Okay, so let's say you had never heard of any of this stuff. Like you never heard of any findings about this and stuff. And all I told you was, and let's say there is no benefits associated with CO2 going in the atmosphere, which of course our whole lives depend on CO2 going, the energy we get from putting CO2 in the atmosphere. But let's just say you just heard that CO2 levels are going from 0.03% to 0.04%, and then they're headed toward 0.05% of the atmosphere. And you know two things about CO2 that everyone should know. So one is that it is a fertilizing gas, so it leads to more plant growth. And the other is that it is a warming gas, okay? So it tends to lead to more warmth. given the fact, and I'll stipulate something, given the fact that we are in a cold period of the planet's history where far more human beings die from cold-related deaths to heat-related deaths, what balance of positive and negative impacts of rising CO2 would you expect?
Well, I would think, given what you've just said, that certainly I wouldn't expect any catastrophe from this. Maybe this is some kind of leveling off. Maybe this is just some natural phenomenon, but I wouldn't expect anything catastrophic.
Well, leaving aside whether it's natural or not, just it doesn't really matter because this kind of thing can happen naturally, but whatever is happening, I'm just saying, you know that, okay, there's this gas. It existed in this percentage, 0.03%. Now it's 0.04%. It's going to 0.5%. So you said you wouldn't expect it to be catastrophic. I think most people wouldn't.
I would say you would have to make great effort to make me alarmed about this. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I think the basic view would be it's probably overall good. And then there are probably some negatives or concerns. So you might say, okay, well, some places there may be more heat waves. And then if you learn some details, you learn, oh, wait, warming is more distributed in cold places, particularly at northern latitudes. So that might make you even less worried because, you know, okay, Siberia getting a little warmer is different than Mexico getting a little warmer. But even if you don't know that, so I think your general view would be, yeah, you're going to have a lot of good plant growth. It's going to be warmer, which will be beneficial to a lot of people. Sometimes the warming will be negative. And then if you just take, let's just to push this one more level, what about things like drought and storms and flood? Would you expect all of those to get much worse?
I would not.
Why not?
Well, honestly, the only time I ever really give this any thought these days is when people see various, let's say, weather-related catastrophes, and they just automatically assume that this is caused by global temperatures rising. And so my instinct is they're just constantly making stuff up. They're constantly attributing things to this cause that they can't possibly know, or that seems highly unlikely, or that just seems to feed into their fear-based narrative. That's the only time I think about this stuff.
Yeah, so I think your inclination is totally right. And what I was just trying to get at with the question is that it doesn't make any sense that more CO2 would make everything worse. And that's sort of what's going on. There's this perspective that, oh, if we add more CO2, everything is going to get bad.
Yeah. I actually thought the same thing. Why wouldn't there be at least some silver lining? Why doesn't anybody say, well, at least we'll have X, at least we'll have Y or Z?
And this is a global phenomenon. So there's a 0% chance that it's 99.9% bad to put more of a warming and fertilizing gas in the atmosphere, particularly on a cold planet that's at very low levels of temperature and very low levels of CO2 historically. So the reason I was bringing, sort of going into this long song and dance Q&A type thing, is that I think that almost everybody, including Nordhaus, including many people that I think are better on this issue, they still have this idea that human impact is bad. And so I do not think they're giving an objective view of the full impacts of even rising CO2. So my basic view is, if you're looking at rising CO2 from fossil fuels, you have to look at the positives and negatives of that. Then you have to look at the climate mastery benefits that come with it. So even if there are negatives, we can neutralize and overwhelm them by mastering them. And then you have to look at the overall benefits of fossil fuels. And when you look at it from that perspective, fossil fuels make the world so much better, and we should definitely be using more of them. So my view is it's actually very obvious, but it only if you're coming from a human flourishing-based philosophical framework. And my view is 99% of people thinking about this are not looking at it from a consistent human flourishing perspective. And so it's not a factual dispute, it's a philosophical dispute.
Well, then jumping off from there, I read this in your testimony, and it just boggles my mind. The Puerto Rico Energy Public Policy Act requires 40% of electricity to be obtained from renewables by 2025 and 100% by 2050. And you point out they're not going to meet these targets. These targets aren't being met anywhere. But the fact that you would actually want to pursue something like this at all is going to make the situation worse. Could you imagine? Of course you can. You're the one with the testimony. But a place as poor as Puerto Rico, which, by the way, compared to some places in the world, is relatively well off, but compared to American, you know, the 50 states, quite poor, to do this to them is just unthinkable.
Yeah, well, and it's also, this is Puerto Rico policymakers themselves doing this. So the U.S. is pressuring, particularly, you know, AOC and certain, I mean, I don't want to be partisan about it, but certain Democrats are pressuring them. But yeah, they're already adopting these kinds of things. And yet 40%, again, by 2025, so it's 2.5% right now, and they can't even keep the lights on. It's just a total, but you see this everywhere. I mean, it's crazy in Puerto Rico, but how crazy is it to talk about places in Africa where you've got, I think, over 500 million people without electricity at all in Africa. And they're talking about, oh, how do we reduce CO2? And the thing to say, by the way, about energy without CO2 is that, you know, nuclear has a lot of long-term potential. Hydro is effective, but you can only build it so many places. But solar and wind, there's a lot of misconceptions. So just the quick version is everywhere that solar and wind is used, you have prices increase and or reliability decrease. And the quick reason for that is because solar and wind are unreliable. They don't replace reliable power plants. They just add to the cost of reliable power plants. And then if you try to get away with shutting down reliable power plants, which I call reliability chicken, which is what Texas did, where I am in California, what we've done, is then you have these upward price pressures, but then you also have these reliability issues where, particularly when it gets too hot or too cold, which does happen, whether we're contributing to it or not, that happens a lot, you have these crises. So we're in this embarrassing situation where we cannot provide electricity on demand in the US. And that's at only 10% solar and wind. So you're talking about that's causing those problems at 10%. You know, Germany is at 37%. They have three times our electricity prices, which are already too high. They're talking about all sorts of rationing things there. And then you're telling Puerto Rico, of all places, go 40% by 2025 and 100% by 2050. It is just so cruel and just so not at all focused on like what will make the world livable for Puerto Ricans. It's all about pursuing this idol of an unimpacted climate.
What is the Jones Act and how does it contribute to these problems?
So the Jones Act, and this is not something I'm a specialist in, but essentially it restricts what kinds of vehicles can transport things where, like, and it just prevents the cheapest kinds of transportation. Like basically it prevents, if the US is going to transport something, we have to use these very rare authorized kinds of ships. And so the US can't transport coal and natural gas directly to Puerto Rico, even though that would be most cost effective. So then they end up getting it from other places. So, which just contributes to higher prices because Puerto Rico is an island. And so they do need to, at least at this stage of domestic production, they do need to import quite a bit. So yeah, we need to eliminate any irrational restrictions on importation and therefore of export from the US.
You tell a story at the end of your testimony taken from an African country where there was a child born weighing 3.5 pounds. This child was full term, but weighing only 3.5 pounds. In the US, you would have known incubation is what to do. But as I guess somebody testified from there, but without reliable electricity, the hospital did not even contemplate owning an incubator. So there are all these hidden, like no one is going to look at that situation in that case and say, this is because of the energy policies we've pursued. So much damage is done beneath the radar because nobody knows what the cause of it is.
Yeah. And I think we're in a society that just totally devalues energy. So yeah, this wouldn't occur to people. Like when we talk about Africa today, we hear like, oh, what about climate change? Like what's going to happen if there's more rainfall or less? And like, are you kidding me? Like you need to industrialize. You need to use machines to produce food and to produce clean water and to heat and cool buildings. And like, you need those things. And the world is not a livable place without those things and the energy that powers them. And so an incubator is a great example. It's such an unnatural, amazing thing that provides this little environment for a human being at the most fragile stage of its life. And nobody in the US, would anyone in the US not use an incubator for their child if they found out that it was partially powered by coal? They would still use it. And it is in some way, or it's definitely powered by some fossil fuel. And yet we're telling people in Africa and India and Indonesia, we're telling them, hey, don't pursue this. Pursue green energy, which we're totally failing at with our level of wealth.
Let me ask you about how the hearing proceeded. Presumably, there were other witnesses other than you.
Yes, there were, I think, 5 total, something like 4 or 5.
How many of them would you say were at least partially on board with you?
Oh, I would say half or a quarter of a witness, maybe.
A quarter of a witness, okay.
Keep in mind, the whole setup was coal ash is terrible. Let's shut down this plant. So it's just only, it was very, I would say, myopically focused on this and not in a solution oriented way. And the people who were testifying, and I was a minority witness. So that's part of it, because the Democrats were holding the hearing. So I think they only got one witness. There was a spokesperson for one of the entities there, and he was saying some pretty, you know, some, I would say, mildly rational stuff. He was also way too much sort of advocating renewables and not focused enough on the need for more energy. But, you know, one of the doctors or something said something like, I think you'll appreciate or not appreciate this properly, said something like, you know, economics should never take precedence over health. It's like, yeah, health is not something that's produced in an economy. It just exists naturally, as we know from history.
Yeah. That's just crazy. So now, given that you are approaching this from a big picture point of view, but at the same time with a lot of detail and all the facts and figures you could ask for, did it get contentious at any point? Did anybody challenge you or accuse you of being funded by the fossil fuel industry or whatever?
No. So what unfortunately happens is that most of my opponent's response to me is to ignore me and to pretend that I don't exist and that my positions don't exist. I find that they like going after people who make dumb versions of the kind of argument that I'm making, or at least sort of pro-fossil fuels in some way, or who say some crazy thing about climate. So they didn't engage, but I'm pretty good at taking the opportunity to engage when they don't want. So there's one guy, I think his name is Espayot, and this is a pretty entertaining video, I think. He asked some open-ended question. I think it was about the Dominican Republic, and he definitely wanted all the anti-fossil fuel people to answer. He definitely didn't want me, but he said, does anyone have an... So I was like, all right, I have an opinion. So I talked about, hey, why aren't you talking about the fact that Dominican Republic since 1960 has had a life expectancy increase of 20 years and that fossil fuels have played a crucial role? Like, why don't you talk about that? And so he and I went back and forth and he got pretty pissed off at me. And he actually posted the video, and then I think he took it down after he realized that it wasn't his day.
That's a good way of putting it. So, but who invited you to testify?
The Republicans on the House Natural Resources Committee, and this, I forget the name of this particular subcommittee. But yeah, I think I have a reputation of when nobody else will testify, Alex will testify. Because I had another one earlier. And these are all, by the way, people should check out energytalkingpoints.com. And the first few entries are include my last couple written testimonies and actually spoken testimonies. And yeah, there was another one on basically designed to trash the oil and gas industry and to claim that it gets all these subsidies and privileges, which again, I think is a crock, given how we treat it much worse than as we see we treat OPEC, if you want to talk about current news. But yeah, they tried to get these oil executives to come, and I don't blame them for not coming because they're just going to get assaulted and they don't really have the skills or the, it's not their ability to be able to deal with that, but it is my ability. So I was happy to come. And you know, people just tried to ignore me. I mean, one person insulted the shirt that I was wearing. That was the extent of it.
What shirt were you wearing?
I wasn't wearing a jacket. I was just wearing like a dress t-shirt. And I had a jacket next to me. I just had forgotten about it because it was kind of hot in the room.
I thought you were wearing some kind of like in-your-face fossil fuel shirt.
No. He's just like, oh, this is a fresh face hipster. And he like made up something about, oh yeah, you were brought in by the Koch brothers. People just love making stuff. And also, by the way, talk about the Koch brothers. Like, I love the Koch brothers, by the way, but one of them is dead. So there's only one Koch. Like, people can't even update their lies.
There's only one Koch brother right now.
Well, I'm the only one who funds these things because it was Charles and David. There are other Koch brothers who are alive, but Charles and David Koch. And David Koch died a few years ago. And they're just like, oh, yeah, the Koch brothers paid you to go to this hearing. It's like, you don't even know the state of them, let alone this fake thing that didn't happen.
See, these people have no idea what it's like to be us. For them, all evil can be summed up by, quote, the Koch brothers. But for us, it's like every institution on earth is dominated by people who hate us. I wish I could narrow it down to two brothers. That would really make my life a lot easier.
You probably wish also those two brothers are like this idea that, oh, if you have a pro-freedom or pro-energy or pro-fossil fuel viewpoint, that the world is just raining donations towards you and that you get to live this fantastic lifestyle from that. I mean, that is just, somebody wrote out the other day on Twitter something like, oh yeah, Alex Epstein was just a normal guy. And it was literally something like, oh, and then the Koch brothers paid him to, like.
You haven't gotten a single check from these people.
Well, Actually, no, I've spoken at one of their events before.
No, so I've spoken at an event too here. I mean, that's trivial. It's not like they're paying my salary or anything.
Oh, right. But it's just this idea that, like, it's just this imagination. And I wish this was true in a certain sense. I wish that the oil companies and people associated with them, they should be really donating a lot more money to champion their causes. But the problem is people are so locked into the current way of thinking that we should just be not impacting the planet. There's no conception that there could be a genuine moral perspective of wanting to use more fossil fuels. And so then it has to go to this cartoonish narrative of, oh, the evil fossil fuel barons were just throwing money and you had nothing else to do with your life. So you just decided to suck on their teat and come up with these views, and everything you're saying isn't really true and you don't really know anything. Just they told you what to say too. But I think it comes down to really that people don't have even the conception of an alternative argument. And that's why I just focus on, here's the way I'm thinking about it. And if you're thinking about it from the perspective of human flourishing, oh, it's at least plausible that, yeah, you could like fossil fuels and you could actually think we need more of them in the world.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I understand why some people would disagree with me and might hold a left-wing opinion on some things. I think they're wrong. I think they're anti-human in a lot of ways. But I at least understand it. If you asked me what their position was, I could explain it to you in a way that they would say was fair. Whereas I don't see that reciprocated. They genuinely, there are people on a side of, I'll say, the left-wing side of so many economic arguments, who genuinely cannot conceive that there could be an argument other than theirs. So it has to be that anybody putting that argument forth has to be a lackey of industry or something like that. It can't be a legitimate argument that I actually need to look into.
Yeah, I think it's just very easy to dehumanize people and
to
assume that you understand their motives. Now, I do think that at a certain stage of understanding, you can understand certain kinds of motives, but I would just say you have to do it very carefully. And the first thing should definitely be seeing what is the best version of this argument, not, oh, let's make up something about the evil reason they're saying something that disagrees with what I happen to think.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Is energytalkingpoints.com the site you want to direct people to?
Yeah. I mean, I have other websites, but if you go there, you'll see at the top, there's a way to sign up for my mailing list, which I hope people do. And then also I post on Twitter, but that's where my most current content is. And that if you're interested in these issues, there's probably 24 topics there and expanding, plus this testimony. So I think you can get a lot of answers on these things, and they're all well-referenced. And then I hope other people, they're designed to be shareable. So if you like it, feel free to share any of these points on Twitter or anywhere else.
Well, definitely do that. I'll link to it at tomwoods.com/1950. Get to know Alex. He's a guy we ought to be thankful is on our side. I'm glad he's not on the other side. I wouldn't want to have to deal with him.
I would be a lot wealthier, I think.
You would. That's true. Wouldn't we all? Wouldn't we all? But on the other hand, at least we can sleep at night. And we can sleep in air-conditioned comfort thanks to widespread fossil fuel use.
Yeah, guiltlessly. That's a big
guiltlessly.
Thing.
That's very important. Thanks so much, Alex. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, everybody. Before we wrap up for today, one of my listeners has created a website called strengthandreason.com, complete with a podcast called Mentally Unscripted. And the idea of both of them is not to outsource your thinking, is indeed to think for yourself and to show how easy it is to fall into this pit of just going with the crowd. He covers all kinds of topics, vaccine passports, horrible, horrible, horrible thing, Bitcoin, of course, but also things like overcoming procrastination, things that you need to do to become, frankly, mentally strong. Also, logical fallacies, all kinds of fun stuff like this. So check it out at strengthandreason.com. I just love that. I love strengthandreason.com. I'll link to it at tomwoods.com/1950, our show notes page for today. And if you would like to get a little promo for a site you're thinking of building, make sure you get your hosting through my link and I'll promote it here on the show. You can join my private bloggers group for mutual help. I'll give you some free tutorials, lots of great free goodies. Don't cost you a thing. Check out the details of how to get all these things at tomwoods.com/publicity. See you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.